Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Get everything for your next project at Menards and save big money. We carry everything to help you breathe easier. Allergen air filters help prevent seasonal allergy symptoms and improve your indoor air quality by capturing microparticles while allowing maximum airflow. Save big on all Allergen air filters when you shop at Menards. View the weekly flyer and all of our great deals happening this week on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Toby, you may not know what's true, but you might be able to buy a lake house from your winnings if you're right about the disclosure thing.
My family's already got a lake house. I don't need another one.
Oh boy. Well, on that note,
yeah. You cut that part out completely.
Since the dawn of 2009, one TV show has dared to ask the most important questions about the origins of our world. That show is Ancient Aliens.
Yet until now, no one has asked the biggest question of all. Is Ancient Aliens total bullshit?
And that's what our show's about. Finding the truth under the nonsense of one of television's most popular franchises.
This is...
more like Ancient Aliens. That was my Mulder. That was my Fox
Mulder.
That
was Mulder. Your Mulder? Oh, that's nice.
He mumbles, yeah. I was like, should I do... My thought was, should I do Gillian Anderson? And that was going to be more like Ancient Aliens. I realized both of them, you would do it the same way. Oh, I could have. Oh, the right answer would have been more like Ancient Aliens. That's Charles Nelson Reilly. And then I wagged my glasses.
All right. Shall we do this thing?
We are doing it, Toby.
Oh, this is it. All right.
Let it go. Just let it run.
What you've been listening to so far and will continue to listen to is More Like Ancient Aliens, a podcast that began by pondering the strangeness that is the History Channel show Ancient Aliens, but has since changed course somewhat to look more broadly at how UFOs and aliens are shown in popular culture. I'm Toby Ball. I'm an early X-Files adopter.
I'm Brandon R. Reynolds, a journalist who... liked X-Files, but was sort of scared of the aliens, though not as scared of the aliens in X-Files as I was scared of the aliens in an episode of Married with Children where Al gets visited by the aliens. Do you remember that episode?
I don't think I've watched more than two.
It's a pretty funny episode. He just gets visited by aliens and no one believes him. Very like this episode in a lot of ways.
Yes. All right.
The power of story.
All right, we'll put that in our back pocket. All right, we are looking at today, Next Files episode called Jose Chung's From Outer Space. It's not that Jose Chung himself is from outer space. It's that he has a book that he wrote called From Outer Space. So that was season 3, episode 20 of the X-Files, originally aired April 12th, 1996. Also on this day, Dennis Hopper married Victoria Duffy in Boston. An airport fire in my old stomping grounds of Dusseldorf killed 16 people. And the New York Times reported that Time Warner was going to start charging for web services. It's an innocent time.
Really is, though. That's like day 3 of the commercial internet, pretty much. 96,
yeah.
They turned the key on that, and then it was all AOL commercials ever since.
I've got a funny AOL story, but I'm not going to tell it now.
Is that an off mic story or is it just for another time?
It's an off mic or maybe at the like $800 level on a grab bag collab. Mm-hmm. We tell all our deepest secrets.
You've got mail.
Might as well use that as an opportunity for us to plug.
Yes.
Grab bag collab, our host and producer. We have been doing this for a while and we would love to have some support now that we are expanding our offerings to movie films and documentary films and documentary TV and very popular cult TV hits, all the things that touch on UFOs and aliens and how they all fit together. It means we got a lot more we're covering and also doing bonus episodes like the one that Toby and I just did, which you can get, which is Toby and I talking about Barack Obama's quote unquote admission of the existence of aliens that he had to then backpedal on, and also prediction markets and how they relate to aliens, and also a brief history of the evolution of casinos in Las Vegas and what it means for geopolitics more largely. So go check that out. How do you do that? You become a member of the Grab Bag family, of the More Like Ancient Aliens family. Go to grabbagcollab.com. Become a member. It's $3.99 a month, and you're going to get 4 bonus episodes. Very eclectic stuff. Toby and I riffing with our guests, or in this case, just the two of us. And it's a lot of fun. So $3.99 for that, or $7.99 for the whole grab bag thing. There's a lot of cool stuff there. We're going to do some crossovers with some of our fellow grab baggers. And if you have a few minutes after doing that, go ahead and rate, review, subscribe on your podcast network of choice. Thank you very much. We look forward to seeing you out there. And hit us up on the webs, wherever you might find us. Toby really would like particularly some comments on his photos of traveling around Spain his Instagram.
Yeah, I got to put some more up. All right, why are we covering this episode? I think X-Files in general was sort of the most prominent UFO gateway drug in the 1990s. I think it's probably the most popular sort of UFO-centered show ever as far as mainstream popularity. I guess Ancient Aliens is probably its closest competitor in some ways, but X-Files was more overt in their fictionalization of stuff. Mm-hmm. Were you watching it at the time when it came out?
Some of it, yeah. My mom was a big fan, really liked it, but I think it's because she had a crush on David Duchovny, so it goes. It's funny. It's like Twin Peaks. It was one of those that on paper, I should have really liked and was like, yeah, this is interesting, but I never got deeply into it. Although when I go back and think about it, I'm like, I think I watched a bunch of these episodes, but they all sort of get memory hold in some way. I sort of remember them, but it also could just be from people talking about it over the years.
Chickadee China, the Chinese chicken. You have a drumstick and your brain stops sticking. Watching X-Files with no lights on.
I distinctly remember seeing the movie in theaters and thinking that was pretty great. Bees.
I don't think I've seen the movie. So I did watch this fairly regularly. This is, you know, when I was living in and around Washington, D.C. I can't remember what night it was on, but I think we watched it. Like if we were in, we would definitely watch it. And it's funny, like it's right before a bunch of things happen. So I was watching an episode from the first season. And one of the plot things is, like, Mulder has to find a phone where that he can make a phone call on. And it's because there's no cell phone. So he literally has to like break into this office and use this desk phone that somebody has. It just, you know, it dates it in kind of a funny way because I still, even though I think it started in 1992, I think, you know, so it's 30 some odd years. Still in my mind seems fairly recent. Anyway, that's why we're looking at an X-Files episode. This particular one, I don't think I'd seen before, but everybody talks about it as being like the best X-Files episode. So it seemed like that was a good one to do. And then having watched it, it basically is about these different sort of UFO tropes involving alien abductions and recovered memories, and things like that. And about, I think, the way I was kind of experiencing it was that it was also about how people have kind of internalized those things that they've seen that are out there, so that they're able to kind of reproduce these stories that they know what the elements are because they've been in our popular culture. So that was kind of my theory on what the thesis is. Does that comport with your take on this?
Yeah, I think what made it interesting to me was, one, it's a funny episode. Like, it is surprisingly comedic and absurd, and balances that with, you know, not breaking the reality that Mulder and Scully are in. But I think more largely, it's a whole statement about how all of these elements fit together. Like, it takes all of these different alien tropes, you know, abduction tropes, cover-up tropes, and it presents a point and a counterpoint, and then how these things interact, right? So that's what's happening over and over again. It's like, how are we ever going to get it? What's really going on? There's too many layers. Is there one single source of truth? Which is pretty profound for a mainstream TV series in the 90s.
Yeah. So just briefly about the X-Files for people who are uninitiated, created by Chris Carter. This particular episode was written by Darren Morgan, who is the brother of Glenn Morgan, who was one of the main writers. Chris Carter and Glenn Morgan, and there was one other guy, I think, were the three main writers. I actually interviewed both Glenn and Chris separately as bonus episodes for Strange Arrivals season one. If you want to find out more about the X-Files and their kind of takes on things, that's a good place to go. So it ran from 1993 to 2002, 202 episodes. There's two different kinds of episodes, basically. One is called Monster of the Week, and those are basically like sort of standalone paranormal episodes that usually involve the paranormal or cryptids or something like that. And it's also where they would kind of sometimes experiment a little bit. This one is definitely a Monster of the Week one. And then there was what they call like the mythology or the lore, and that was about a third of them. So there's this sort of through plot that runs through X-Files, and it doesn't really get resolved, if memory serves, at the end. It just kind of goes and goes and goes, although you get more and more details about it. But it's essentially the government conspiracy story where a small group of government officials has contact with the aliens. It's like a nefarious deal that they made with the aliens essentially to save themselves. So it's very heavy on government conspiracies. There's this guy called the Smoking Man, who is sort of an evil bureaucrat, basically, who, you know, is the real sort of villain throughout the whole thing. There's a thing called the Syndicate, which is sort of the agency that has a contact with the aliens. And then there's this whole other thing about like the black oil. There's like a virus that's sort of made out of black oil. And there's this project to create human alien hybrids who are resistant to this virus so they can live through it in a way humans can't. So it's sort of putting together a lot of like popular and then like more obscure conspiracy things together. It's very conspiratorial. It's very paranoid, kind of claustrophobic. And that was, I mean, for me, that was really the best part of the X-Files, was following that story, because I just thought that was compelling. And, you know, I think what they did with it was 80% like spot on. And then every once in a while, they'd go down some weird rabbit hole that didn't quite hit as far as I was concerned. But it's just two very, very different things tied together by Mulder and Scully.
And, of course, their smoldering chemistry.
Yes. What do you put them in the ranking of famous duos from fiction?
Well, I think in the kind of modern era, they're really high up there. I mean, they were great characters. You know, perfect balance of one is a believer to the point of madness at times, and the other one is rational. So you have this really kind of classic ration versus emotion, you know, faith versus science type of thing going on. And, you know, and then again, like they had just sort of a great chemistry. There's, of course, a will there, won't they, that people have explored. And eventually, spoiler alert, they will and did. They came along at a time where they were asking these questions that felt very pertinent. You know, like how much do we trust the government? This is shifting from, you know, Reagan and Bush to Clinton coming along and the end of the 20th century. This idea of like, what do we really believe anymore? And, you know, and are these paradigm shifting revelations going to come along? And these two being the kind of exponents of what makes sense to believe, you know, really anticipates. I mean, it comes out around the time of the internet and it anticipates, in this episode particularly, the idea that truth gets really hard to track down. We're experiencing that even more 25 years later, 30 years later. So I think, you know, as representatives of a kind of shift in American consciousness, I think they did a great job with that. And we're really exciting and funny. And again, just hot together.
Hey, Scully, is this demonstration of boyish agility turning you on at all?
Also, worth noting that one of the writers and producers on this show and on this episode, he was in the credits, is Vince Gilligan, who went on to do Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. And now everybody got excited because he returned to the whole alien thing with Pluribus, the series on Apple Plus, which we'll review in a future episode.
Yeah, it's just clever, right? Because you can tease out the thematic stuff that they're after by having this conversation between the believer and the skeptic, and it comes across pretty naturally. I think I have them ranked third in my mental one behind Holmes and Watson and Kirk and Spock. But I think they're probably third.
Do you think that Kirk and Spock had better sexual chemistry?
Something wrong.
A kink in my back. That's it. And a little higher, please. Push hard. Dig it in there, Mr. Thank you, Yeoman. That's sufficient.
I don't think that's necessarily what I'm after when I'm looking for the top 10 all-time fictional partners. I guess it doesn't hurt. All right, let's talk about this episode. This episode has Charles Nelson Reilly, isn't it? If you don't know who he is, I really can't fill you in too much other than to say I basically know him from him being on the Hollywood Squares all through the 70s and maybe 80s.
Charles, according to doctors at Johns Hopkins University, doctors there, there have been over 29,000 of them through the years, and yet only about 5% of them work. What are they?
Situation comedy.
Do you know anything more about Charles Nelson Reilly?
Yeah, he was like the go-to comedy guy. You know, he'd be on talk shows, late night shows. He was just a reliable comedy presence. And also the idea of like the flamboyant gay before we were talking about. It's like, you know, everybody's got the wild gay friend and America pretends like gays don't exist. But it's like, yeah, we got the one. We got the one guy who is gay enough for everybody else.
I kind of put him in with Paul Lind. Remember that guy?
Yeah, I often confuse the two.
True or false? Research indicates that Christopher Columbus liked to wear bloomers and long stockings.
Well, it's not easy to sign a crew up for 6 months.
Hollywood Square stalwarts.
Five years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
rocketmoney.com/cancel.
At the end, it's sort of a fun sort of knowing thing, they mentioned the military industrial entertainment complex, which seems to have preconceived of Lou Elizondo. If Lou Elizondo didn't exist, would we have to create him? And this may have been the beginning of that. You know, one of the clear precursors for this episode, inspirations, is the Betty and Barney Hill abduction. And the very first scene, like the first like minute or two, might as well be from a Betty and Barney Hill thing, except the people in the car are slightly different. They're in an old car driving in the dark woods at night. Light comes out of the sky. Their car stops. They can't start it. And little gray men come and are about to pull. And they do pull them from the car. And they're sort of semi-conscious while this is happening.
Harold, what are those things?
How the hell should I know?
This all changes when another UFO shows up with like a sort of cyclops, psychotic gorilla comes down. And you don't really see what happens, but you assume it's not going to be good. And at the end, it turns out it wasn't that good for them.
You have the aliens. One alien says to the other, one of the grays says to the other, like, what the hell is that, Jack? And the other one says, hell if I know, or something. And that's the end of that scene. You're like, okay, so, this episode is going places.
Yeah. So I think this is, at least in retrospect, my sense is that this is supposed to be a film of the book that this guy, Jose Chung, writes. So one of the things that comes up a few times are people in their memories. And I assume this is a film, this part of it is like somebody's actual memory where they're remembering people who are actually Air Force officers as being aliens. So that seems to me to be what's going on there in retrospect, but though at the time it just seems like it's gray aliens.
So the kind of top frame is Charles Nelson Reilly is this guy, Jose Chung, who apparently is this very famous writer. Scully comes to visit him because he's working on this book called From Outer Space, and he wants to talk to her about her experiences with this whole abduction and her take on it. And she loves him. He's apparently a famous writer. She says the best thriller of all time was one of his books that was written. So anyway, she's a big fan. But he has this little spiel early on where he's talking about the kind of book he's writing.
What made you decide to write a book on an alien abduction if you're not that interested in the subject matter?
Actually, it was my publisher's idea. At first I was reluctant until I realized that I had an opportunity here to create an entirely new literary genre, the nonfiction science fiction. Now see, that gimmick alone will guarantee its landing on the bestseller list. In short, to answer your question, money.
I think that is a nod to Truman Capote, also a kind of flamboyant gay of a certain era, who, when he did In Cold Blood, his whole thing there was, I'm inventing a new genre called the nonfiction novel. And it was the idea of like all the conventions of journalism and reportage, but presented as with the drama and themes and structure of a novel. And I think that's possibly what he's nodding to here, like the idea of taking all these real stories and then, you know, giving it a sort of novelistic zest. But in his case, it's a sci-fi novel. That's just my observation. I think that might be why.
No, I think that's right. Part of the challenge of writing a novel like that is that there's not anything definitive. So you're just getting these different stories from different people. But as you go along in the episode, it's like people are like, oh, no, that's not the way it happened. And they'll tell like another variation on the story, which is sort of equally batshit. And a lot of them have either Mulder or Scully acting in ways that are not the way they would act at all, basically threatening somebody with death if they talk or something. There's a whole bunch of things where different characters end up doing different things based on who's telling the story, but there's a few things that repeat again and again, but with different people doing them along the way.
It is really a nesting doll of stories within stories and then reinterpretations of stories. And you see like the girl gets hypnotized over and over again. And what she's seeing from the hypnotist chair, she's looking out. First, she sees the hypnotist center frame, Mulder's to the right behind him, Scully's in the back, and then some U.S. Air Force officers to the left. And then that will flash to aliens in that same position talking to her as she's relating what's going on. And then there's another thing where there's Air Force officers who also hypnotized her. So the idea is, like, we don't know which version, you know, that being under hypnosis, they make a whole point. This is one of the things that I think is really interesting about the episode, is that they acknowledge the criticisms to all of these techniques. So, you know, she goes under hypnosis and she confirms what happened was alien, alien, alien. And then Scully is like, well, hypnosis actually can distort memories and just leads to total confabulation. People just make stuff up because they're so susceptible. And they'll just pull stuff from the kind of currents of culture. In the case of like UFO, it's like, what's the UFO narrative? And then people will just boot that up, which you've talked about in your program, Strange Arrivals.
Yeah, they actually, she says at one point to Mulder, I think, when Mulder's like, did you hear that? And she's like,
that's my problem with it, Mulder. It's all a little too typical. Abduction lore has become so prevalent in our society that you can ask someone to imagine what it would be like to be abducted, and they'd concoct an identical scenario.
Yeah, if it were only one person, Scully, but we have two individuals here, each verifying the other story.
I mean, that this was a criticism of Bud Hopkins and John Mack and David Jacobs. You know, when you show up to talk to them, you're already predisposed to think that you were abducted by aliens, and then you've also probably read, so you've read their books, or at least read enough about them to understand like what their theory was. So when you go under hypnosis, what you're giving back to them is your belief of what happened to you based on what they've already written. And then so you're just reinforcing that story for them. Other sort of Betty and Barney Hill things, there's missing time. They talk about missing time. This is also something that continues throughout the whole alien abduction sort of lore, starting in 61 with Betty and Barney Hill and going through the aughts again with Bud Hopkins and John Mack and David Jacobs. There's the couple tell these mutually reinforcing abduction stories while under hypnosis, which again is what Betty and Barney Hill did, and which is why people found their stories so compelling. The actual thing they show of them like on board these high tech thing, and then I guess they're running tests on them or whatever. You know, Betty and Barney Hill had tests run on them supposedly, but they weren't in like this high. I mean, Betty Hill's like basically like, I was sitting in a dentist chair and they were like scraping my fingernails and stuff like that. So it wasn't this dark and cold situation. I mean, she, I think was sort of trying to relate it to something that she was familiar with, which was, you know, going to the doctor at that time in 1961 and what that was like. And that was sort of what the aliens were doing to her.
In the episode, it's way kinkier. She's on this metal structure table, tilted up and naked, but wearing this either vinyl or leather kind of diaper with these tubes going into it and this thing across her chest. Then she looks over and her boyfriend slash date, well, it's her first date, so maybe too soon to say boyfriend. Yeah. He's laying down on a table. He's staring. He's out of it. He's there, but not. And he's also got the same kind of black leather or vinyl across his body. And the aliens are asking questions to each other. They're having some kind of argument. So, but it's very funny. It seems sort of like weird 90s sci-fi kink. Again, I was like, man, primetime TV really, really went for it sometimes.
Yeah. Those were weird times. The girl gets kidnapped, says that her date was really out of it, which I think is verbatim the way Betty described Barney. Betty was very aware of what was going on. Barney was sort of seemed in and out of consciousness or in a daze or whatever. So that's all kind of sort of acknowledging sort of the urtext of alien abductions, right? It's the Betty and Barney Hill story. It kind of started the whole thing.
The plot driver in this, though, is unlike Betty and Barney Hill, they were married. In this case, there's the implication that it was possibly a date rape because she woke up and her clothes were on backwards and inside out. And in that case, then they're like, all right, we have to figure out if he did this. And so they hypnotize they interview him. He says it was aliens, but she doesn't remember. And then she's like, I don't remember anything. Then under hypnosis, that's where all the alien stuff comes out. But that sort of pushes the story along about, okay, who's right? Who's telling the truth? And then that goes deeper and deeper. Because there keeps being this guy, Manners, who comes in, right? And he raises the stakes every time. They just found your alien. They just found your UFO.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Your bleepity bleep alien.
Yeah, he cusses. Apparently, that's because the series director name was, I think, Kim Manners, had a potty mouth, cursed a lot. And so they incorporated that into the story, saying bleepity bleep. Yep.
So they talk about regression hypnosis and its unreliability. They name check MK Ultra, which is, of course, the secretive government mind control program run by the CIA in the 60s. You do get these scenes where they're in a cage and next to them is an alien who is smoking a cigarette, which is not good for aliens, and keeps saying,
this is not happening. This is not happening. This is not happening.
And then what you find out later is that there was an Air Force officer.
Lieutenant Jack Schaefer.
This is not happening. It's not happening. This is not happening. It's not happening. It's not happening.
So it's clear that she like ran into this guy at some point during this thing in the night, but her memory is of him being an alien rather than an Air Force officer.
Mulder supposedly finds him walking naked down the road, gets him some clothes, takes him to a diner, and he says, this other pilot and I were flying this experimental jet that was supposed to look like a UFO, but then we actually got kidnapped by a real UFO. And so I think what you're seeing in that scene where they're all in the cage is she remembers him as an alien, but he was a pilot, like you said. But that's supposed to then lend credence to his story that they were all kidnapped together and they were like held in these cages for a while before they were returned to real life in these dazed conditions. But everybody remembers it differently.
Right.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
So the men in black show up a couple times, and it's pretty amusing. Jesse the Body Ventura is the head man in black. He shows up. The first time you see them, there's this guy who is in his garage.
He was the electrical lineman at the beginning named Rocky. He saw the abduction happen. He saw the car. Because you see him at the beginning, the car drives by. Then the UFO comes down. So then he shows up later and says, I saw the whole thing play out. And then I was up for 48 hours writing down my account of what it was. And while he was writing, then supposedly his garage door opens. This 1960s sedan, Lincoln, I think, comes in, all in black, just pulls into the garage, window rolls down. It's Jesse Ventura as a man in black who's telling him, you don't want to say what you've seen.
Your scientific illiteracy makes me shudder. And I wouldn't flaunt your ignorance by telling anyone that you saw anything last night other than the planet Venus.
People will think you're crazy. Yep. And that's the story he's relating to Mulder and Scully.
Yeah. Venus is often confused as a UFO. And he's sort of suggesting that.
That is right? Like the men in black were this artifact of like Kenneth Arnold in the 40s, I think. The first.
What's it?
That kind of first UFO sighting up in Washington, which makes sense because this is in Washington. And he said there were men in black that visited him. So that's, speaking of Urtex, that's a part of the original myth, was that they think of them either as government agents covering up a secret or possibly as aliens themselves in the guise of humans. There's two, you know, there's kind of different versions of what they are and what they represent, but they always show up after UFO contact and try and dissuade them from telling their story, often with threats of physical violence, sometimes looking like professional wrestlers who then go on to become governors of states.
The most I've run across original text, Men in Black stuff, is in The Mothman Prophecies by John Keel. John Keel, who, by the way, is a super interesting writer. Like, his stuff is super weird, but I find it very readable and entertaining. But he talks about there being a man in black who goes, I think, to the CBGB club in New York City.
Hell yeah.
And he doesn't know how to use utensils. He orders some food and he's not quite sure what to order. And then he gets it and he's trying to like look at other people to see how they're using their utensils. And so the waitress just gets totally wigged out by it. And it's like, and this is all written as being like a true story in the Mothman prophecy, which it's pretty great. It's pretty great. But in that case, I think the implication was that he was actually an alien trying to figure out how to be a human. And there's a few different appearances by the Men in Black, and they're all like weird and creepy. So there's like one like real Ancient Aliens moment where they talk about how the Men in Black like have these like ancient roots and Celtic tales of fairies that were dressed in black. And I was like, oh, all right. That kind of nails the Ancient Aliens aspect of things. They don't really follow up on it, but that was in there briefly. So do you want to talk about Rocky's deal?
Yeah. Rocky, deep in the alien lore, recurring are these sort of visionaries who show up and tell these crazy stories. Often people who may have some diagnosed or otherwise mental illness. So this guy's name is Rocky, R-O-K-Y, and he's supposed to be named after Rocky Erickson, who had paranoid schizophrenia. So he tells this whole story where he's saying, I saw these aliens, and then he describes how that third alien, the, what'd you call it, the Cyclops ape thing?
Yeah.
Who is rendered at the beginning of this in this kind of like stop motion way, which is supposed to be a homage to Ray Harryhausen, who did, you know, all the movies in the 60s, Sinbad and the skeletons and stuff. That's why that character looks so kind of janky. It's like it was intentional. But anyway, that alien comes up to this guy, Rocky, tells him his name is Lord Kinboat and he lives underground. And then he takes him down into the center of the earth and talks about how he's been there forever, which is another ancient alien trope. Like, yeah, the aliens come from the center of the earth. You can get to it, you know, via the hole in the North Pole or South Pole. And that's where this civilization has been hiding out all this time. So the Rocky character, again, is one of these kind of eccentric figures, maybe like a John Keel, like Richard Shaver, who was another one who had this incredible story of aliens and underground civilizations and weird energy. The Shaver mysteries are really fascinating reading too, kind of like the John Keel stuff. But I think that's what that's supposed to represent, is that these eccentric figures show up with these incredible stories that read like fantasy or sci-fi. And they get a lot of attention because they're like, this could be real. You know, it's just somebody who's like willing to spin a crazy story, often becoming either a sci-fi writer or, as happens with Rocky at the end of this episode, who moves to California and starts a cult. There's the implication of a little bit of L. Ron Hubbard in that, or just any of the other like small to medium-sized UFO cults that emerge in the 60s and 70s. And so I think that's his whole thing. It's just to illustrate like the eccentric ones, the potentially mentally ill ones who come in and lend their stories to this sort of larger mythology and how that shifts things. And again, how much you're supposed to take this seriously. In the show, as Mulder is reading through this document that Rocky gives him, even he's like sort of trailing off like, oh, this person isn't necessarily well or isn't right. in the same reality as us. So it compromises Rocky's narrative a little bit. Is that what you got out of it?
Yeah. You do get these different types of witnesses, right? And they're sort of commenting on how people kind of internalize and then manifest what they've experienced. And for him, it's sort of like this life-changing sort of sees everything in a different way. The girl at the end feels as though she has this like mission to make the earth better. So I think she's like Googling Greenpeace on her computer or something while her boyfriend is still is searching for his meaning in his love for her, which she is studiously ignoring.
They only had one date.
Yeah, she doesn't owe him anything.
It was a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got to chill, clearly. I mean, at this day and age, we would consider him a stalker.
For sure.
There's a pretty funny part of it, which is a spoof on the famous or infamous alien autopsy video that was shown on Fox in the early 90s. There's some shots that are taken basically directly from that fake video. And in this case, it's Mulder and Scully working on a guy who happens to be wearing an alien costume. So it's showing them cutting him open, but in fact, they're just cutting the costume open and then they take it off. And it's this Air Force guy.
This other dude trips over in a field, sees this guy dressed as, thinks it's an alien. And he's the one that's recording it with a camcorder. And he's sort of depicted, I don't know if this is accurate, but there's something a little bit incel-ish about him. You're supposed to kind of understand if the internet was more of a thing at that point, he would be a guy who's like online all the time.
Yeah.
Like that kind of conspiracy guy, you know. And I guess I'm interpreting that because like his mattress was on the floor in the corner of a room and everything seemed shabby, which may be unfair to people who have their mattresses on the floor in the corner. That's just an efficient way to do it. But Scully's doing the autopsy. Get this, right? Scully's doing the autopsy. She's cutting into him. And then only later does she go, oh, wait, he's wearing a mask. And she pulls the mask off and there's this pilot under it. I mean, I know it's done for comedy, but, you know, if you're a doctor, maybe look for the mask first.
That's right.
She got there eventually, though.
She's distracted by Mulder's smoldering sexuality, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So it kind of ends up where this sheriff who's been constantly popping in with like new developments is like, well, they found your blabbity blab UFO, and they go out and it's a crashed plane with a lot of debris around.
Yeah. The guy keeps coming in. He says, we found your alien. It turns out to be a guy in a suit. And then he comes back later. He says, they found your UFO. So there's Mulder and Scully in this field with this obvious like spy plane or whatever it is that has crashed in this field. And the idea is that these guys, because as we said, they're one of the pilots is this guy that Mulder sees walking down the highway. And he says, yeah, we were pretending to be a UFO and they were dressed as aliens, or at least the one guy was. So when the plane crashed, the pilot who was dressed as an alien was thrown into a field. And then the other guy went wandering off because he was like in a daze. So he had taken his clothes off, was wandering. Then the Air Force comes and gets him. So the body that they were doing the autopsy on vanishes. The military comes and takes it. Mulder's talking to the guy in the diner. And then the military comes and takes him. And then next thing we know, they're at this crash site. And they're pulling both of their bodies out. So we know one guy was dead because he was being autopsied. And the other guy was alive. So the implication is that the military had killed him. So, you know, is that what happened? Are they trying to cover up for something? And Mulder makes the point they were allowing it to be a story of UFOs because they wanted to cover up for the fact that they were flying this top secret jet around. And they didn't want that to get out. So that, you know, other nations would know like the level of our stealth technology or whatever. This is a narrative that we saw in the 80s and 90s with all of our spy tech, basically. All the stuff that they were test flying out in the desert or in and around Area 51, the whole idea was like, yeah, they'll allow these UFO stories to propagate because it's better than knowing what's really going on. Same with Roswell, right? It was a balloon that either was or was not spying on the Russians. And so in this case, it's the same thing. It's like, here's this aircraft they have decided to allow people to spread the story that it was a UFO because that covers up what's really going on. But then Mulder makes the point, maybe they're just putting this here to make us think that it was actually an Air Force spy plane that's crashed. And that covers up the whole actual UFO abduction, which is a whole inversion of a thing that you and I have talked about a bunch, which is the story of Paul Benowitz, who was picking up these signals from a base in Albuquerque. And then this guy, Richard Doty, who we've talked about before and we'll certainly talk about again, who was this Air Force intelligence officer. Either, you know, and you can't believe anything that he says because he said a bunch of different things, but he's certainly willing to talk. But apparently, according to him, his story was that he was dispatched to make Benowitz believe that it was a UFO to cover up for all the actual government secret stuff that was going on, up to and including flying him over this mesa. What was the mesa called?
Dulce.
Yeah, of course, Dulce, which then supposedly had was the site of an underground war between aliens and intelligence officers. We talked about that before in the episode with Underground Aliens with Amber Hunt. Go check that out. That was, I think, from our first season. But anyway, the idea there was Doty was flying Benowitz over this mesa and said, look down there. And there was this supposedly crashed UFO. And he said, that's the UFO that you saw. This is what we've been investigating. But then the reveal, according to Doty, was that that was all a set. They had set it up to look like it was a crashed UFO because it was actually a crash spy plane? Is that the deal?
My memory is that Benowitz had flown over and seen a crash spy plane and then had told Doty, and Doty had this set put up to make it look like it was a UFO. And that was part of their convincing him, along with some other things, that what he had thought were transmissions and videos of UFOs around Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque, that he was capturing UFO stuff when in fact it was a drone program that was top secret.
So this X-Files episode inverts that. Rather than showing Mulder and Scully Air Force plane that's dressed up to look like a UFO, they show them the Air Force plane, and then Mulder's the one who says maybe this is a cover up for the actual UFO. So it's flipping that Benowitz story a little bit. But the whole idea is like they're showing you one thing and hiding what it really is, depending on.
So confusion.
Yeah. To sow confusion. Exactly. And, you know, then of course the episode ends, as it always does, with we don't know what's going on. I think part of the appeal too is that this is sort of a meta episode. It's sort of playing with the tropes it's establishing and having fun with the idea that, like, we never really land on an answer and we don't have to. You like watching the show anyway.
Right. I mean, if you're constantly landing on answers, it's less exciting show.
Yeah. It's the will they or won't they of government conspiracies. If the couple sleeps together, then you sort of blow the possibility of future sexual tension. Similarly, if you say this is definitely aliens or not, well, then it's resolved and we move on.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I think that it is a good example of being very self-aware and the idea that you can have fun with the audience and make fun of yourself and be meta. Like for an episode that is intentionally confusing, the fact that that's one of the most popular episodes of X-Files is really interesting because most of them are way more conventional. I mean, it's, you know, like you said, it's Monster of the Week or some of this lore, and it's like they set up something and they resolve or they don't. But in this case, they're like, no, the confusion is the point, which this is the first time we're mentioning the Kurosawa film Rashomon, but it's that idea, right? Like there's all these different takes. You never really know what's going on. Is there one source of truth? And again, you know, going back to some of the things we talked about in many previous episodes, that's the ultimate answer of something like disclosure, which is somebody out there knows. Somebody is standing in a room right now looking at a crashed UFO or having a conversation with aliens. And any day now, at least according to Polymarket, go check out our bonus episode, grabbagcollab.com. Any day now, that's going to be revealed. And all of this, all of the anxiety and the insecurity and the confusion that the episode intentionally cultivates is all going to be resolved. It's all going to collapse into one singularity, right? This moment of truth where it's like, now we finally understand how it all fits together. And won't that be great? But interestingly, just in January of this year, January 18th, there was an analyst for the Bank of England who, I don't know if you saw this, but said, you know, if aliens are disclosed, it might cause a rush on Bitcoin because it'll create extreme price volatility in financial markets due to catastrophizing or euphoria and a collapse in confidence. So the idea of aliens coming along and like resolving all of our woes and making everything clear and finally stabilizing and solving the problem of history, this bank analyst sort of gives the lie to that by suggesting like, no, that'll just cause further craziness. Like, why would you think that would make things more secure? In fact, it'll go the other way.
Do you see the, there was an op-ed, I think it was in the Washington Post, but it was basically about the whole thing where we like send signals out into space, like hoping that if there's some other civilization out there, they'll pick it up. And he's basically like, why the fuck are we doing this? Like,
oh yeah. Yeah.
If there's somebody picking this up, like we have no idea what their reaction is going to be or what they're going to want to do or what, why are we like, we're fine. We're fine just the way we are. We don't need aliens coming to find us because we're sending something out to them, which was kind of a funny thing to run in one of the top newspapers in the world. Just put it anyway. I think it shows if you don't talk down to your audience, you can make like these sort of interesting comments about things that, you know, if you've been watching the X-Files, not just even through the X-Files, you've been exposed to these different ideas. So this gets to play around a little bit with those and in a way that's clever and that the audience can be knowing and kind of enjoy it. And then, you know, it's not like it's a bunch of jokes, but it's just, it's funny scenarios. The knowingness of it is what makes it funny.
Again, the mystery of like, you can watch it again and sort of piece together what the beats are. But at the core, like between all those scenes, there really never is any resolution. We never really know. Like the top level reality is, as far as we know, is Scully talking to this guy, Jose Chung, the writer. That in theory is the like top reality. But then, you know, there's all these other things like, okay, the Men in Black came and visited Scully in her hotel room. And then she wakes up the next day and Mulder's there sleeping in a chair and she can't remember what happened, you know? So like all of that just throws things into doubt in this way that you walk away from the episode feeling a strange sort of, again, I don't know. It's a very particular, very modern, I think, kind of confusion that has only increased as there are more sources of information, sources of quote unquote truth all over the place that are, you know, metastasizing, particularly with AI videos, ChatGPT. Like we're definitely accelerating along a flight path that this show is establishing exists in a small way and saying, you know, things are only going to get weirder and harder to parse. And that just kind of nervous sense of how do you trust anything becomes, you know, has become even more prevalent. And, you know, and in the midst of this, it's not surprising that like UFO and disclosure and belief in aliens and all that stuff continues to be stronger rather than sunsetting. There's more of that now than ever. And as we said in our bonus episode, you can bet on all that stuff.
Word.
So that may be a way to make money. On that note, we'd love for you to become a member of the Grab Bag family. More like Ancient Falians family, go to grabbagcollab.com. Become a member, $3.99 a month for all the More Like Ancient Falians stuff. There's a lot of stuff in there now. And there's only going to be more as we do more crazy bonus episodes talking about Everything from 90s toys to Britney Spears videos and, of course, prediction markets. Go check it out, grabbagcollab.com. And please go rate, review, subscribe. Toby and I would really appreciate it, especially since Toby needs to maintain that lake house.
It all relies on you, the listener.
That's right. This has been More Like Ancient Phalians. I'm Brandon R. Reynolds.
I'm Toby Ball.
We'll see you next time.
Next time on More Like Ancient Phalians. Back when email seemed like a cutting-edge technology, Jodie Foster receives a message from ETs somewhere out there in the universe. That's the plot of Contact, the classic film written by Carl Sagan and his wife Anne Druyan. There's Matthew McConaughey sporting a flowing mane, short-sighted National Science Foundation bureaucrats, and a character that seems to anticipate today's tech oligarchs. Also, the best special effects 1997 had on offer. See y'all next week.
More Like Ancient Phalians is a Grab Bag Collab production. Our producer and editor is Heather Eagle Ears Wilson. And our music is by Nathan Reedy.